Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 28th day of September, Anno Domini 2024, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. Again, I apologize for my voice. I'm hoping this is the end of allergy season, but I'm allergic to pretty much everything on the planet, so
forget
I just swapped
noise.
The summer allergies for the winter, the outdoor allergies for the indoor. It's just, never mind. Anyway, European digital rights group NOYB, or None of Your Business, has filed a privacy complaint with the Austrian data protection watchdog DSB against Mozilla, alleging the company uses a Firefox privacy feature enabled without consent to track users' online behavior. The feature, called Privacy Preserving Attribution, or PPA, and jointly developed with Meta, formerly Facebook, so you know how good it is and how evil it's not, I'm sure, was announced in February 2022 and was automatically enabled in Firefox version 128, released in July. NOYB's complaint claims that despite its name, Mozilla uses the feature to track Firefox user behavior across websites. According to NOYB, PPA enables Firefox to store data on users' interactions, ad interactions, and bundle that information for advertisers. Mozilla claims this system enhances privacy by measuring ad performance without individual websites collecting personal data. However, NOYB says that part of the tracking is done in Firefox, interfering with the user's rights under the EU's General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR. In a July support document, Mozilla described PPA as a non-invasive alternative to cross-site tracking designed to help advertisers assess the effectiveness of their ads without sharing information on users' online behavior. Mozilla also insists that PPA doesn't share browsing information with third parties, including companies, the company itself, and that advertisers only receive aggregated data about ad performance. Firefox users can disable the PPA feature by opening the web browser's privacy and security settings and unchecking the option labeled Allow Websites to Perform Privacy-Preserving Ad Measurement. And our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is no, not my beloved Firefox. I can believe it. This is why I use Vivaldi or Brave or DuckDuckGo. And the only secure browser is Lynx. So far, we've got 26 votes. And no, not my beloved Firefox has just edged out. I can believe it. You can vote in our poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And, of course, you can give us a call if you want to talk about that or anything else. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415.
That's very, very similar to the Google issue where they're trying to come up with a way to let advertisers see what they want without tracking people individually. And Google Topics was worked out great technology-wise, but the EU said, nope, you're limiting advertisers' access to their customers. Yeah, but you're making things private. So now Mozilla's facing the same thing. They're trying to make things private. So you have to turn off privacy to let advertisers track you in the EU.
Right.
Which people don't want that.
That's why I like DuckDuckGo.
Well, that's just it.
DuckDuckGo
and Brave.
Yeah.
And Vivaldi.
Yeah.
The smaller browsers just take longer for the the lawsuits to start.
I just, you know, because I know the minute, excuse me, I use Google, you know, to search for something, I'm going to get 16 million ads or products similar to that annoying every time I'm scrolling through.
Right.
And it's like, no, I don't need that. So I have the icon right next to it, and I'll flip right to it, do my search there, and then that way I don't see it in my darn browser.
Right. Well, I have to admit, I often use Lynx. Lynx is a text-only browser that you use in your command line, the command line. It's available for every operating system on the planet, as near as I can tell. And it means you get no pictures, which means that all those single-pixel tracking pictures that are out there, you don't get them. And it always comes up and says, hey, here's a cookie. Do you want it? No, no, no. Luckily, you can also set it in the config file to say never accept cookies. Because I've been to websites where you click no like 50 times. It's just horrible. You just no, 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 no.
And that's Lynx with a Y.
That's Lynx with a Y. It's also e-Lynx or Lynx with an I, and or Icy Lynx or this 50 different. It's open source, so there's about a billion of them.
But
you
know what the problem with all this is?
What?
You said one magical thing that probably 75% of the audience out there doesn't know. Command line.
Command line. But I will tell you this. If you are a web developer, you must use Lynx. Because Lynx will show you what people who are visually impaired will see when they go to your website.
Mm-hmm.
And what they will hear if they use a screen reader.
Like JAWS or that.
Like JAWS. And if you were to go to, for example, Ask Nick or Soundbites, I think, at least I hope, I've done a pretty good job of describing every picture that's there and keeping it clean. I went to Apple's website, and the bottom of the page is 50 pages of disclaimers and what you can do and what you can't do and everything else. And a screen reader is going to read all of that.
Ouch.
It's going to be just
painful.
Really painful. So if you are a developer and you care about the visually impaired, which you kind of should.
You might want to
use Lynx to check your websites.
And isn't that part of the ADA?
That's part of the ADA. And in addition, for many years, although they've gotten better now, they've gotten different now. Lynx was what Google saw, because Google didn't do anything with pictures and didn't do anything with JavaScript or any of that stuff. So what you saw in Lynx was what Google actually indexed in their search engine. Now, of course, they can do pictures and everything else. But even so, you should definitely check any website you make with Lynx.
I've read about litigious people who go around looking for stupid little violations. And people can't do that. And until it happened at our office.
Yeah.
Somebody noticed that our handicap rail in the bathroom is at 29 inches, 29 and a half inches, and not 30 inches.
Wow.
30 inches is the regulation.
Yep.
So we had to move it. So what I wanted to, I wanted to go into the regulations. And so 30 inches on what? The top, the center line, the bottom of the rail?
Right.
I think it just said 30 inches above the floor. So we were 29 and a half at the center line. So that means that at the top, it was 30 inches.
Yeah. Yeah, you were fine.
Or whatever the number was, yeah.
If they don't specify, you get to pick.
Yeah.
It's the way, the judge gets to pick.
Yeah.
That's the way it works. Oh, yeah, I ran a website for a long time that was quite international, and people were all the time saying, well, you're not doing this, you're not doing that, you're not doing the other. And I would come in and say, okay. Because I was specific about this. I said, okay, here's the GDPR. This is the section that applies, and look what I did, and it matches exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I know you want to be porky about this and be, you know, important because you found a problem. This isn't a problem.
Yeah. I've read some websites just, if your IP address says you're in Europe, they won't let you in because they don't want to have to deal with it.
They don't have to deal with it. Yeah. And for the ADA, I admit that Soundbites is not 100% compliant because the pictures down the left side just have our names and doesn't say picture of Dave Enright or picture of Steve Reich. And I admit that. I should probably fix that. But I haven't yet.
We went to a convention in Atlantic City and stayed at a well-known politician's hotel 30 years ago. And one of the people in our group is disabled and has a wheelchair and a dog. When we checked in, they said, we can't bring that dog in here. So it's ADA compliant service dog. He's got his badges. Here's his license. You have to let us in. And so she's telling me that I never tell them I have a service dog because they'll suddenly be booked.
Yep.
And when we were walking up and down the boardwalk, we go into a store and the people were following us around. And the dog was an Irish setter, which is not, it's a big dog. It's not a usual dog to be a service dog.
Right. But they are beautiful.
Yeah. You know? And
smaller than a lab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so people would watch us like, we go to restaurants and the dog would just tuck in under the table. Nobody knew he was there.
Right.
It's because he's trained properly. And then that brings up the whole mess about emotional support animals that aren't trained.
That's a problem.
Giving real service animals a bad name.
I had a couple of
but
things.
But that convention is where I met the captain of the Enterprise, CVE-65.
Okay, yep.
The entire cast of Lost in Space was there.
Oh.
And
wait, including Robbie?
No.
Okay, so it's not the entire cast.
Not the entire cast. But I think they had the suits. They didn't have
all the humans.
They didn't have the actor. Yeah, all
okay.
The humans, yeah. And 5,000, 10,000 people at this convention, it was a monster convention. Everyone's in line to get their autographs, and like 3 hours in, a couple people start trying to get up to leave. Jonathan Harris, the oldest one of them all, stands up, these people paid for a ticket to get my autograph, I'm going to stay here and give them my autograph. And so they ended up staying 5 or 6 hours, but the one thing that really annoyed us, who was it? It was Jonathan Frakes and LeVar Burton were there, and at the time, Paramount didn't let people do custom autographs or rush up and give them a gift on stage. But this little kid came up to LeVar. I really love you on Reading Rainbow. Can you sign? Yeah, all right. And so he signed. And then we watched the kid run back and sell it to a dealer.
Oh, yeah.
And we were so mad. And then apparently LeVar saw that, too, because he didn't sign any more autographs up on stage.
Yep.
But it's crazy what people will do.
It is.
People, they're the worst.
People, they're the worst. Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. But if you're worried about being tracked online, the Vivaldi browser, the Brave browser, the DuckDuckGo browser are your friends. And let's dispel a myth. Incognito mode on any browser does not make you anonymous on the internet. It only means that it doesn't save your history on your computer.
So your spouse doesn't know where you went.
Right, but that's all it does. So if you go into incognito mode thinking you're hidden on the internet, you are not.
Or private browsing. Some browsers call it private browsing.
Private browsing. You are not. That is not what that is for.
And there were lawsuits about that. People who didn't understand private browsing. So now Google and Chrome, or probably the other ones too, if you go into a private window, there's a big long list. Here's the things that we block, and here's the things we don't block.
Right.
You're private to other people on your computer. You're not private to the internet.
Right. And so be aware that that's a lot of people have that misconception, and you need to be aware that it's not what you think it is. If you want to be anonymous on the internet, that's very hard because every time you go somewhere on the internet, you give them your address.
And your ISP knows where you're going.
Right. And you have to because otherwise they can't send you data. and your ISP knows where you're going, because otherwise they would not be able to route you there. And every node you go through along the way also knows who you are and where you're going, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to send you there.
And then you see a lot of commercials for people, companies selling VPN solutions to help keep you safe on the internet. No, it just changes who knows where you go. So now, right, instead of your ISP knowing you went to that website, the VPN company knows you went to that website.
Exactly. And the VPN, and it also depends on how the VPN really does its job. But generally speaking, it will prevent either end from knowing where you are but they will know where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them have logs. We know this because the FBI has subpoenaed those logs and gotten them and found out where people went.
Especially the free VPN services?
Exactly. They're selling your data left and right. Why do you think they're free?
Yeah.
The free VPNs, we know this. We've seen it. We've seen the results of it. Many free VPNs, now I'm not going to say all of them. There may be some obscure ones somewhere that don't. But many VPNs that are free because they sell your data on the other side. They tell the other side where you're going. Because, again, that VPN has to know who you are. Otherwise, they can't send your data to you. And they need to know where you're going. Otherwise, they don't know how to get the data that they're going to send to you.
And
so VPNs are not the privacy magic wand you think they are.
And the way the internet was designed, every time you connect to the internet, you have an IP address, an internet protocol address, like your mailing address. Like the post office knows where you live, because that's how they deliver mail to you. So when the internet was being designed, IP service providers were all assigned a list of addresses based on their company, and they're all pretty much geographic. So the IP address, like 99% of the time, gives your geographic location down pretty much down to the major city. Although sometimes it's a little off. My office is in Victor, and the location says near Canandaigua, which is true.
True.
So that means our internet link goes to Canandaigua first.
Right.
But yeah, so looking up, and there's IP address lookups. You can tell what internet service provider that IP address is assigned to. And then the RIAA goes to that person or that company and says, I want who was using this address at this time. And then the marshals show up at Nick's office and say, you stole this movie? And it was a bad movie, too.
It was Adam Sandler. It was The Waterboy. If I were to steal any movie, I promise you, I swear on everything anyone holds sacred, it would not be any Adam Sandler movie, certainly not The Waterboy.
Yeah.
I've told this story before. It was somebody who borrowed one of our laptops. All the laptops were registered to me, so I got the hit. But it ended up, I explained to them what happened. They were very understanding about it, and we got the guy who did it, and it wasn't me.
Yeah. And so you'll see people talk about VPNs for stopping that. It doesn't. And then if you get really sophisticated, you might hear about Tor, the onion router, that tries to hide that behind. There's three hops between you and the other end. Well, the government runs a lot of those Tor nodes, so they know where you're coming anyway.
Well, that's just
it. So the idea is that you go to the first hop goes to the second hop, which knows the first one, and the first one knows you. But now you go to the third hop only knows the second hop.
Right.
It doesn't know you.
Right.
So theoretically, that can be safe. But if say, the NSA is controlling that hop, they know everything both directions.
That also assumes that they are quick enough, if there are even logs, to get those logs before they roll over. Now, a lot of Tor nodes say they don't keep logs more than like a minute. I mean, you got to got to keep it long enough to maintain the connection. That's about it. And I get that. I do understand that. But a lot of people have been caught stealing some major things through Tor nodes. I did a paper a thesis on Tor when I was going for my master's degree for one of my classes. And I downloaded a bunch of books, and I made sure that every book I downloaded was a book I already owned. So at the very least, I could say, look, A, I'm doing this for a class,
mm-hmm.
and B, it's just a new way of the same book I already paid for, so give me a break.
Yeah, the backup copy clause in the Copyright Act allows you to do that, but the DMCA clause doesn't allow you to do that, so we have two laws that are fighting each other.
Right. So, I mean, that's what I did, and you know, I wrote up my paper. It was very scientific, charts and graphs and et cetera, et cetera. But every day I thought, oh, so I'm going to get a knock on the door again.
Yeah. And so you're on a list somewhere.
I am on a list. There's no question.
That's good. You're on a list as the IT guy at this school, so we don't have to worry about him. That could be a good list.
we actually had can I talk about this? I'm going to. We had the FBI come on campus at one time because kids were making money. They were printing money.
Brand new copiers. Hey, let's see if I can make money.
Exactly. And they were, and they did, and copiers will narc on you.
Yeah, so they added that technology to all copiers, that if it sees money, it puts yellow watermarks that are almost impossible for you to see, but easy for them to see. I remember I was doing an ad for a customer, and she wanted to make a coupon that looked like a dollar bill but had her face on it. So I wanted to look up the regulations. So the Secret Service handles money. So I look in the phone book, that's how long ago it was, got the Secret Service phone number, and I'm expecting as soon as I finish dialing, the black helicopter will land. And
but this busting guy, down the door. Yeah,
this guy, hey, Secret Service, what can I do for you? So he explained it has to be less than 75% or more than 125% actual size, and it can't be that color green.
Oh, interesting.
But otherwise, you can make fake money. So you ever,
for sure, because we TV shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now, TV shows are really good. There's one company that prints, like, money and signs and banners. I saw it on an episode of Tested. And they make sure that there's movie prop only. So instead of, like, In God We Trust, it says movie prop only.
Right.
People still find those, don't notice it, pass it out. You ever seen the Chinese hell money?
No.
Trillions of, they're usually red, and they're ridiculously trillion-dollar bill. It's called hell money because you burn it to ward away evil spirits.
Sure.
But somebody sees this Chinese trillion-dollar bill, and they go, what's this worth? And they go to a bank, and it's nothing because it's a piece of paper.
Right,
yeah.
Right. There was a company, it was a movie prop company who got fined because they made fake money that was too real-looking.
Yep.
There's all, you know, the government is capable of getting at you when you think, oh, I can be private on the internet doing this. You cannot.
Well, the newer bills now, too, also have that strip through them.
Right.
You know, for the higher-end bills, the 50s, the 100s, and all that other stuff right. that you can just hold it up to light and see the strips right through it. That say, you know, 50 or 100 or...
The exact composition of U.S. money is a trademark secret.
Right.
The specific color of green and how the ink is made is a secret. It's the Earl Hayes Press Company is the prop company. That they've been making pretty much every movie post in a movie. You need posters, you need a briefcase full of documents. They've been printing all those things since 1915.
Wow. Wow. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. Grab an adult beverage. Come on back, put up your feet, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go too far.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody get up.
All right, that's about all the dancing I'm good for. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And we'll be glad to take your call, answer your computer questions, make up stuff if we have to. We don't care. We'll do whatever it takes.
You don't know any better.
We don't. Yeah, you're asking the question. You don't know what the answer is. All right.
Our 100 years of experience doesn't tell us what the answer is sometimes.
Right.
But I saw a comedian saying, people say tech support is just using Google. And on behalf of all tech support people, I'm offended. But yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I've always said I don't have to know everything. I just have to know where to find it.
Yep.
And that was true before Google and is true during Google.
Mm-hmm.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys. Got a question. See a lot of commercials these days about NordVPN.
Yep.
And I'm just wondering, is that something I need to have maybe on my laptop? I don't do very much computing in public at all, very often. So is that something I ought to have just as a piece of protection or what?
I personally don't think so. Generally speaking, if you go to a website that is encrypted, and about 99.9% of them are these days. If you go to a website that's encrypted, all of your data are encrypted from your laptop to the other end. So somebody can see where you're going, but they can't see what you're doing. So, yes, I suppose if you go to a public library and log into a porn site, someone could see that you went to the porn site. They can't see what you did there.
That's when they turn the cameras on.
That's when they turn the cameras on. That's when people crowd around and say, what are you watching?
Yeah.
And you're on the 11 o'clock news.
And you're on the 11 o'clock news. But assuming you can avoid doing that, I don't see that you need a VPN at all.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were talking about a little earlier. The commercials overhype what VPNs do. Your safety and your privacy. Basically, the only thing it does for end users is hide where you go from your ISP.
Right.
Then NordVPN or any other VPN service knows where you go, and they can sell that information, which who knows if they do or not, because we don't know.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
So the real use for a VPN is a business to connect two offices together. When I'm on the road doing service calls, I use a VPN to connect to my office so I can get to my office database.
And what a VPN was originally designed to do is the way Steve is using it. They run their own VPN. So when you log in, it's just like you were in the office.
Because we don't want our customer database to be public on the internet.
Right. So that's what a VPN was originally for. So for example,
virtual private network.
Right. So back in the day, when in fact they still do it today, many colleges, students can log on to a VPN to get at college only information that is not available publicly.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a VPN was originally designed for. Everything else is an off-brand use and should remain suspect.
Okay.
So, yeah, don't believe all the advertising hype.
Right.
I see a lot about it these days, and sometimes it just causes me to wonder, you know. Yeah.
No, I get it.
I really need.
Well, you're good to wonder, and you're even better to ask.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
We run into customers all the time that are paying exorbitant prices.
Yeah. Okay, well, that was a relatively simple question. I just see it so much these days.
Yeah.
I wondered if I needed, but as I said, I do very little public computing. Everything I do is at some place I even know, or I'm at home, but I don't go to libraries, because basically I take the theory I don't trust anybody.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. When you're on the internet, trust no one.
A few years ago, it was a bigger issue. because most of the internet was not encrypted. In fact, it was interesting. Like, you go to Amazon, you're browsing Amazon products. That's not encrypted because it mm-hmm. didn't need to be, and computers couldn't handle the encryption needs at that time. When you went to log in to your account, then it was encrypted to log in. But after the Snowden leaks, when was that? 2014. Which showed that the NSA was spying on everybody. They had a tap on Google, and tapped and was spying on everybody. Virtually every website encrypted itself almost overnight. So you go to a website, there's a little padlock at the beginning of the address showing you it's encrypted on your computer before it even heads out of your computer. In fact, so many pages are encrypted now that Google has stopped showing the padlock when you're encrypted and shows you a big error, a red error icon when you're not encrypted. Because
it's easier.
Yeah, it's easier, and it's so rare now for something to not be encrypted.
I see. Well, I learned something, and then I got a little itch scratched for me because I'm thinking, hey, maybe I need to do this even though I'm not out in the public. But almost any place I go, it's got a little padlock now. So.
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
I typically don't worry about it.
A couple years ago, there was a program came out called FireSheep, which was a plugin for Firefox. And so going back to that Amazon login, if someone was on the same Wi-Fi network as you, they could see the cookie that Amazon set saying, oh, he's logged in. And then that cookie is the statefulness of your login. So FireSheep could grab that cookie, put it in your computer, and then you could buy everything on Amazon thinking you were the other end, the other person, because you had that cookie on your computer. So that was a quick, like, 2 days where all the web browsers updated themselves to combat FireSheep.
Right.
So basically any place that set a cookie to be logged in rather than encrypting all the time. So it was Facebook was a common target. You're at a public coffee shop. You're on the same Wi-Fi as everyone else. So everyone has the password for that Wi-Fi.
I never do that. I just don't trust it.
Well, and that's gotten better, too. Now each session is encrypted from your computer. So even though everyone's on the same Wi-Fi, your computer encrypts the data before it goes out.
Oh, because I wouldn't I'd have to, my life would have to be in jeopardy before I would use one at a coffee shop almost.
Yeah. And a lot, and sometimes you're going on a news site to read the news. That doesn't need to be encrypted.
Right.
So it wasn't until the NSA got caught spying on everybody, and now everyone encrypts.
And computers have gotten faster.
So it doesn't matter.
And better, so they can be in the encryption doesn't have an impact.
So 64-bit was the first encryption. If your computer did 128-bit, it couldn't be exported from the U.S. because that was a munition. Now most encryption is 4096-bit.
Right. So, you're pretty safe going most everywhere, but you're even safer doing what you do now, Larry.
Well, as I said, there are places I go, if my computer's there, I just don't trust them.
Mm-hmm.
No way. As a matter of fact, I'll try not to even look at it on my phone because I just don't trust that someone's not trying to spy on you. So, that may be overkill, but that keeps me safe.
It's good to be paranoid.
Yep.
All right, well, I hope I don't get too paranoid, but I'm certainly paranoid about that.
But is it just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they are out to get you?
My motto used to be, I'm a systems administrator, I cannot be paranoid enough.
Yep. Someone's going to try breaking in. There was a story on GRC recently. A university in Israel is well known for really weird data exfiltration techniques. They did one where they could get a computer to play audio outside of human hearing.
Ooh!
But another computer could hear it up to 20 meters away.
Sure.
They had one where they would shine a laser at a bag of chips, the aluminum reflector on the inside, and they could recreate everything. Most of the sounds that were coming from that bag of chips, and just the crazy things they've been able to put together on how you can exfiltrate data.
One way that fascinated me is there's an app you can put on your phone. It's not readily available, but you can get it off the dark web. There's an app you can put on your phone, set it on the table between you and someone else, and it will read the seismic little tremors of the person typing and will translate that. All you have to do is tell the app, are you on the left side or the right side? And it will be able to translate that to text so you can catch their logins and passwords.
Because years before that, the U.S. Geological Survey put out an app to track earthquakes.
Right.
Because your phone has a, and before that it was hard drives, has a motion detector in it to detect when it's falling so it could shut down the hard drive to avoid a crash. And now your phones have all these sensors in them. So seismometers are expensive to put around. So they figured to crowdsource it. So millions of people with cell phones, they can pinpoint earthquake epicenters really well now. And then someone figured out, hey, I can use that to figure out typing. And
there's always a dark side.
Statistical analysis of the pattern tells you how many, how often a key is used, which can tell you what letter it is. It's just amazing what people are finding.
Yeah, it's amazing. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
Well, I'm up. I got up actually before the show started, so I'm plugged right in here.
Well, that's one step ahead of us.
Exactly.
So before I get to the reason I was calling, I got a couple of comments. As far as figuring out what somebody else is up to, there's a book I read a couple of years ago called Cryptonomicon.
Oh, yeah.
And
I cannot recommend it strongly enough. Amazing book. And it also, I think it had like a thing at the end that talked about how they lay cables under the oceans and stuff like that.
Yep.
But anyway, the thing with VPNs, you know, there are some VPNs that do not log your activity whatsoever.
Well, they say they do not log, and a couple of them have been verified as not logging.
Yeah, yes. I think that the one I use is one of the verified ones.
That's good,
It's a well-known name. But, yeah, you do have to do a lot of research to make sure. But between that and private browsing, that actually does pretty much cover you, other than what the NSA might get up to if they had some reason to get after you.
Right. And often the NSA will require a VPN to give them logs. So it's only if a VPN has no logs that you're secure. I often thought about
it. But then they come and take the computers.
Then they come and take the computers.
But there's no logging. So, yeah, the one of the real big VPN companies, they advertise on a lot of podcasts, their servers have no hard drives. Everything is done in RAM.
Right.
So when the power goes off, you're dead. But I've seen these really interesting things that the police, FBI, can use to keep power running to the computer. If there's no log, you can't tell where anything was anyway.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah, to get to the main thing, first off, I have good news and bad news.
Oh.
The good news is that my computer cannot be upgraded to Windows 11.
Congratulations.
Mine too.
So the bad news is it started rebooting, and now I'm getting, I guess, the new version of the blue screen. And I get two different messages so far, IRQL not less than or equal, and the other one is K-mode exception not handled. And one other thing I just did this morning, so maybe that fixed it, was it said to shut down the fast start option for Windows 10. So I did that, and it might be 3 or 4 days before it happens again, or it might not. So, but I just wondered if you guys had any insight onto this. There are like my whatever it is that tells me I got like a million drivers that are out of date, and yet when I, Windows doesn't see drivers as being out of date, so I haven't decided whether to go after all those.
Yeah, you got to usually go to the driver company and do it and update the driver that way. But unfortunately, sometimes there are no updated drivers.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, CC Cleaner tells me I got a gazillion outdated drivers.
So it must It must have a list and know that there are new versions.
Yeah.
And in fact, yeah. K-Mode exception generally deals with drivers.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the driver update may be in Windows 11.
Yep.
Right. They may have stopped updating for Windows 10 altogether.
Although I wouldn't expect that until, was it September 2025 is the official end of life of Windows 10.
Right. So you may need to, and this is a pain, but you may need to go to each individual manufacturer of each individual thing that you have a driver for and see if they have an update. Now, is this like a Dell laptop or anything?
No.
A name brand?
I built my own.
Okay.
So, you're going to have to go around to each of the manufacturers of each of your components and see if there's an update. I'm sorry, there's no shortcut there.
And I'm still thinking that long run, granted it's supposed to be abandoned come next year, but there are so many new computers out there that didn't have that chip in there. They can't go to Windows 11. I've got one, and the machine is only 9 months old.
They're backing off on the TPM requirement a little bit. The trusted platform module that is expensive to put in computers, so the cheap computers don't have them.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, that'll be another Linux machine.
Yep. But I'm sorry, Dave. It's really the K-mode problem is definitely driver related.
Okay, I will go after that. And my machine, I'm headed for Linux eventually, but I also have to maintain some Windows applications, and so I'll probably do that in a virtual machine. I haven't sorted that all out yet, but I think this hardware is getting kind of old anyway. Maybe I should just buy way up at the high end and lots of RAM and get it over with.
Yeah.
The vendors would like that.
The vendors would like that, and Microsoft isn't interested in the low-end people anymore. And it seems that everything they're putting out really requires a fairly high-end machine, and the higher end, the better.
Yeah.
And the other thing you can do, though, Dave, even if you wind up getting, say, you get another machine that's got Windows 11 on it, that other machine, what you do is when you buy that other newer machine, you get an A-B switch. So it can handle two computers with one monitor, keyboard, and mouse. And on that other machine, you play around with Linux. So when you get tired of Windows 11, and eventually if they go to a paid version, where you got to rent it, you're going to be familiar with Linux because you're already playing with it on an older machine, which will probably run pretty darn fast.
Yep. And a lot of monitors now have multiple inputs.
Yeah.
So you can plug into multiple computers directly without needing a KVM switch, which is handy.
Yeah, I've actually got dual monitors on my one machine. So adding a new box, I just would plug the extra monitor into the new machine.
Yep. Yeah, there you go.
I've got one Lenovo monitor where the auto switch is too fast. So I'll switch to a new computer, and it hasn't seen the video signal in a second, so it switches back to the other one where the signal is already there. I wasn't ready yet. And apparently on this model, I can't turn off auto switch.
Oh, interesting. My current monitor, I actually plugged into HDMI 2. So every time it boots, there's this moment where it's sitting there going, nope, what the heck, we'll try the other one. Oh, there it is. Okay.
What's interesting is that according to StatCounter and other websites that track Windows versions, there is still a measurable version of Windows 7 still being used, still Windows 8. So people have had this argument forever. When Windows 8 came out, everyone hated it, didn't want to give to 7. But they were a little justified on 8, but 8.1 did fix most of those problems. But 10 came out, and everyone hated 7. Now 11 comes out, and everyone hates 10. It's no one likes change. Because most of the time, the change means buy a new computer.
Right. Microsoft wants change. A, because it is easier for them to dump old versions. They don't have to maintain them anymore. And B, they're in bed with a lot of manufacturers. You often have to buy a new machine. And C, every one of their developers has a magnificent high and mm-hmm. machine, and they're not developing for the low end anymore.
And their shareholders need them to come up with something new every quarter, so the price, the stock market goes up.
And right. the thing of it is, though, with Linux, if you get to learn that, I mean, what would could also expand your horizon is you say you've got some apps that you know you need the Windows for. You might want to get into Linux and check out to see what other versions. You know, might not be the exact same name, but a version they're liked. You know, like I was using Quicken for the longest time, and I happened to find Money Dance. Well, Money Dance was only pennies for the subscription one time. And now I get updates free all the time for that, and it looks exactly like Quicken. But I don't have to pay the yearly $97 rental fee for Quicken.
And the same is true of something like LibreOffice versus Microsoft Office.
Yeah, there's so many other alternatives.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, Dave, easiest choice right now, the easiest thing to do, although it will be tedious, is to check for new drivers, because that, I think, is your problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okie doke.
I will do that.
All right. Thank
Talk
you, Dave.
To you soon.
Let us know.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Yep.
Talk to you soon. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a lot of options there, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No question. Some of them cost a decent amount of money.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if you're going to buy a new machine, we say this to everybody all the time, particularly nowadays, if you're going to buy a new machine... and the old one is still working, save it.
Yeah.
And play with Linux. My wife's computer died, and it is way dead. But she's been faithfully backing up, because I nag her about it. And I gave her, my best laptop. And she's got that up and running. And the only thing is She didn't particularly care for OpenOffice. It doesn't do PowerPoint the way it does it. It's PowerPoint equivalent, not exactly the same. And she's so used to PowerPoint. So all right, I bought her a license. I said, "Here's your license. We'll download it. We'll set it up." Not today. But every morning she complains that it's not right. Okay, we'll get there. eventually. But then she discovered that there were a couple of things that she had not backed up on the old computer. So now I've got to I'll pull the old drive out of the old computer, because I'm sure the drive is still fine. That wasn't what died.
No.
And so I'll pull the drive out of the old machine.
Uh-oh.
What?
That means you're going to be sweating a lot.
I'm going to be sweating a lot. Well, it's not so bad when I'm taking something out, because I don't have to put it back and make it work again. I just have to take it out. And and then I can just stick it in an external case, which I've got, which is easy.
You know my number.
I know your number, and I may be calling you. And there's a beer in it for you when I'm done. All right. That's the end of it. Yeah. All right. The first hour of this show is now history. You notice we've been doing this for so long, they just, says something to each other. The first hour of this show is done, but don't go too far, because there's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. We'll be reading news. We'll be talking about stuff. We'll be taking your questions. We'll be making things up. It's going to be glorious. And all you have to do is stay tuned, because we will be back in just a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 50 years on the air in Rochester.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbite. Again, let me apologize for my voice. I would really like allergy season to be over with. But as I said, once summer allergies are done, my winter allergies will start, the indoor, outdoor versus indoor allergies. So I don't know that this is ever going to get any better.
Duck season. Wabbit season.
Duck season. Exactly. Unfortunately, I can be shot in both. Something's wrong with macOS Sequoia, and it's breaking security software installed on some updated Apple systems. Sequoia, a.k.a. macOS 15, was released on Monday of last week. By Thursday, reports of problems with security products from vendors including CloudStrike and Microsoft had begun to pile up with no explanation from Apple. It has been suggested that one possible cause of the problem could be networking bugs in Sequoia. There have been security bulletins from Microsoft, CloudStrike, and others warning about the issue. Both Microsoft and ESET have posted bulletins about networking problems in macOS 15, and both report different fixes from their respective problems as well. After upgrading to Sequoia, ESET software can inform users it's unsupported and also cause network connectivity trouble. The issue seems to be tied to network filters configured in macOS. It must be removed before the software will work. If users don't do that, the software must be removed and reinstalled, which is probably a better idea.
Mm-hmm.
According to Microsoft, its issue has to do with macOS's stealth mode, which stops the machine from responding to ping requests or connection requests from closed TCP or UDP networks. Stealth mode has to be disabled in firewall settings to resolve the issue. Also not a great idea. That depends. Apple has acknowledged some unintended changes that it was working on fixing, but we're not sure if that means the issue is at the firewall or lower-level networking components. Microsoft's notice on the issue, which advised customers not to upgrade to Sequoia, indicates the issue has to do with changes to the network stack in macOS. I don't know how many people care what Microsoft thinks about it when they're Mac users, but okay. Either way, it's something that never should have happened, and it's not the first time either. If you pride yourself on building secure systems, you can't push out software that breaks security tools. If you had problems with Sequoia, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
That's one of the reasons why we always like to say don't install .0.
Right.
Wait for the .01, .02 even. So just in case something goes wrong. There were also problems with iOS 18 on M4 iPads. And so that bricked some iPads, and they pulled back the update, and I don't know if they haven't released it again yet. But the one about ESET not being compatible seems like ESET check. Oh, what's the version number? It's got to be 14. And the version number comes back 15. Oh, we're not compatible.
That may be it.
Yeah.
That well may be it. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt. I don't know how many Apple users care what Microsoft thinks.
Yep.
In addition, you know, they're not using Microsoft security tools. Many of them are not using ESET. So,
and some of their comments you might not want to print.
Well, exactly. But for those of you who are, and you will find that more likely in a business environment or an education environment than you will in a home environment. They will have to work with Microsoft tools and Microsoft people.
Yep.
So I get that. That part I get.
And a major system release almost guarantees incompatibility.
There will be problems.
Especially with security tools who do things at a very low level that probably changed in the new version.
Right, right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Pavilion, New York. What's up, Brian?
Gentlemen.
Nope. Nope. Wrong number. Sorry.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Greetings from the gateway to New York's stunning southern tier. It's going to get real pretty here real soon, so get in your car, come down here, bring your money. We need it.
No, yeah, understandable.
Been a Linux guy for decades, and I found myself buying a used Windows computer, Windows 11. And I have to tell you, the last time I messed with Windows was the early vestiges of 7. Windows 11 is actually pretty good, man.
I've heard that.
Well, they've had 40 years to get it right.
Right. But I was really impressed. I got this thing, and I said, okay, I was going to wipe it immediately and just put Linux on it, but I figured I'll give us a try. And it actually boots up quite quickly. I'm not pressing this computer. I don't have a lot of stuff on it, so it doesn't have to do a lot.
Right.
But I was really surprised at how far they've come. It's like they must be listening to somebody.
Well, and that's just it. They're, you know, they've had a couple of scares over the years where people, you know, were buying Macs or were running Linux. And so they, you know, used to own, what, 98% of the market? And sure. Now they're down significantly from that. And so they're working hard to get better at what they do.
Especially since they lost, like, the school systems because the school systems went to Chromebooks.
Right.
Yeah, which is pretty much my diet lately, and then my other stuff, you know, just stuff out of it. I probably picked it out of your garbage, so that's how bad my stuff is. But I just wanted to, you know, I was really surprised at how I've found myself frustrated at points with Linux when it comes to doing things like installing printers, stuff like that. That can be a little bit of a trick. But
interesting, right, the latest couple of versions of Linux, though. When I install a system, I go to look at the, you know, installing a printer, and it's there already.
Okay.
I don't even have to do anything anymore. It just shows up.
I've got to shift out of Mint, too. I think I've been running Mint on 3-box.
Yeah.
And I started because that was at the time when I started messing with it. It was easiest to install, and it went quite well. But I do have to start exploring different Linux.
Yeah, there's so many different flavors that, you know, and they, like Nick said, they just find it. Most of the stuff there. I've got an old LaserJet 4 and TN and that I had from when I had my business going, and it found it no problem. And it's a network printer.
One of the advantages is the big name companies like HP, you're probably going to be there. You know, you get some of the smaller companies may not be.
Yeah, my brother printer just showed up. It was astonishing to me. I just went in to say, okay, I better set up the
It's there.
It's already there.
Okay.
Yeah, no, yeah, the brother printers always seemed to be the best. I was always kind of amazed at how, you know, like you plug in a mouse and your computer finds it. You plug in a monitor and it's just there. You know, you plug in a peripheral. But printers, for some reason, maybe it's just me. Maybe I got the...
They were universal drivers for the keyboards and the mice, and not much changed on that. But you take a printer, and the codes that it would send, you know, from different programs were so different.
For 20 years, it was like that. Now, most printers have... plug and play ability, and since they added AirPrint for iDevices and Google Print for Android devices, you don't have to install specific drivers for that printer anymore. They can use the generic driver that gives you 99% of the options.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a lot of companies have stopped making drivers. Oh, just use AirPrint.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, well, but my EcoPrint, my EcoTank, it was just causing just massive spooler errors, and God forbid you print off your phone, that thing would just load the whole thing up. And I found a bunch of tricks and things to do on the net, none of which worked. So I don't understand why, you know, it was just massive spooler errors, 18, 19. Then you'd finally get your print, it would be fine. But
interesting. No, that I haven't seen, I'm afraid. But I don't use Mint,
that might be specific to my stuff, which... totally possible. So that's cool. Well, listen, man, I listen every week, you guys, and even though I don't get a chance to call much, but certainly we're out here and we're appreciating you.
Thank you very much, Brian. I appreciate that. Thanks.
Okay, man, and come drive time, I'll drop a couple bucks on you. Promise.
It's coming up shortly. Thanks.
Yep, I'll do it.
Bye-bye. I should probably mention, for those of you who do run Linux, there was a recent update to CUPS, the Common Unix Printing System.
Which also Apple uses for third-party printers.
Which also Apple uses. There was a flaw they found that caused security errors. They found it on Tuesday, and I got my update on Wednesday. You should probably, if you've gotten an update for CUPS, if you've gotten an update for Linux, for anything, install it.
They probably the person that found the update or found the problem fixed it. And
that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And then said, "Oh, there's a problem, and the fix is in the pipe."
Yeah.
That's the way they almost always work under Linux. And it was an old flaw. It was around for years, and nobody found it. And this person found it, and the next day it was fixed. It was a big hullabaloo for a day. Oh my golly, this is terrible. People can take over your network and everything. Oh, it's fixed? Oh, okay. Thanks.
Well, just reboot.
Yeah. And in many cases, you can set up Linux to install in the background. I know that there are people who say, I don't want to be the first to do an installation. With Linux in particular, they've done a fairly decent job of testing before it goes out. In addition, under Linux, there's no issue in terms of something like the registry. In Windows, the registry is a single monolithic giant file that if some third-level programmer screws up, you're done. You're done. Just take a shotgun to the machine and buy a new one. In Linux and in Mac, every program has a separate configuration file. So if I screw up my config file, it screws up my program, but doesn't hurt Dave's or Steve's program that they've written. They have their own separate config files. So that's a much better way to do it than the incredibly stupid registry.
Well, I've been
running
Linux.
It must have made
sense
to somebody at the time.
No, it makes sense to no one ever.
Well, I've been running Linux for, what, maybe about 5 years now? And, you know, I'm no expert by any means. You know, I always have to rely back to you on it for the different questions and that. And I've got it so it just auto-updates. And I haven't had one problem
Mac
with
Mac and Windows auto-updating? Maybe not.
And this, I have had no problems. I just have a message that says, we updated. Oh, okay. Go on with what I want to do. And
right. Every once in a great while, it will say you have to reboot now.
Yeah.
But that's it. Or reboot when you're ready.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be now.
Mm-mm.
And it's not going to pressure you, and it's not going to take over your machine.
Mm-mm.
And it's quick, and you can keep working while the update is in place. Only if it's, so for example, if it's going to update Chrome, you have to get out of Chrome. But anything that it updates, you know, any drivers or whatever that it updates in the background, you don't have to touch anything.
And that's going to be true, too, of any other program that you might be in, if it's got to update that, too.
Any front-end program.
Yeah.
But all the back-end programs just keep working.
Yep.
And basically what happens is you keep using the old version until you reboot.
Mm-hmm.
But the new version is just ready to go. Done. So there's no rush. There's no, you know, hurry. And in many times, the new program replaces the old program on the fly. So you don't even have to ever reboot because the new program is working. It's quite an amazing system. And in fact, Linux is the model for what Windows is starting to do now. They've just touted, in this new version, you don't have to reboot when we do an upgrade. Wow, thanks for inventing that.
It was only done how many years ago?
25 years ago for 40 years ago for Linux. But thanks for inventing it, Microsoft. So, you'll find that there's a great deal of...
Wait a minute. I'll clarify that just a little bit. They invented it, so that it wouldn't prevent a blue screen.
Right,
that's,
right.
That's
right.
Their only claim. You know, you won't see a blue screen.
Right.
Whereas Linux, you never saw it anyway.
You won't see as many blue screens, is how that works.
Probably.
But yeah, there's it's just one of the advantages of Linux. We had a one back when I was doing this for a living. One of the guys who worked under me was in charge of the Linux servers and the web server and et cetera, and he got really angry because there's an uptime log that you can look at how many days, how many weeks, how many years. And it had
11 days, 15 hours, 59 minutes, seconds.
There you go. and he got angry because the uptime monitor clicked over to zero again. Because it had run out of time. Clicked back over to zero, so he thought, all right, I'll reboot.
Oh, jeez.
But he didn't have to reboot.
No.
There was no reason for him to reboot ever. He got actually angry when the uptime monitor clicked back over to zero. He was really porky about it.
We missed a birthday.
Google's.
Linux, September 17th.
Yes. Linux, that was the day that Linus Torvalds sent out the email that said, guys, I've got a home version of Minix. Do you want to try it? Mm. And it's just a concept right now. Just an idea.
Yeah.
Also, yesterday was Google's birthday.
A lot of things.
So
going
it's
on
the
in
three
September.
Of us. It's Soundbites. It's Linux. It's Google. All in the month of September.
Mm-hmm.
So. A
lot happening in Virgos.
Clearly, all New Year babies.
Cold winters.
Mm-hmm.
Cold winters. Christmas, New Year's, celebrations, drinking. I get it. But yeah, so Linux and Microsoft and everything else all started this month. It was it's a good month for computers all the way around through the years. But yeah, so if you are thinking of trying Linux, again, we've said this many times, get an old machine. You can put Chrome OS Flex on it and turn it into a Chromebook. You can also try a version of Linux to play around with. And like I said, depending on the one you get, the version that you try, and there are a trillion versions. But depending on the one you get, it'll set up. It'll auto-update. Again, the first time you set it up, you'll probably have to reboot because it will have changed so much with the update. But from then on, you'll rarely have to reboot. And it should find everything you use unless something you've got is so old, it can't possibly work. I've got a USB turntable that's 20 years old.
A what now?
Yeah. I've got USB turntable.
Vinyl's making a comeback.
That I used years ago to rip records, vinyl records.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that it would work on my Linux machine. I bought it 20 plus years ago.
Is it USB?
Yes. It should.
It probably would. Yeah. It's a USB audio input device, and you just run a capture program.
Yeah. It should, but I haven't tried it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be shocked if it didn't, is my point.
Yeah. But
so, we have new ones for sale in our store from Victrola of all companies.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And you know, there are people who still have vinyl records and want to rip them to an MP3 or some other audio format.
Or just burn them, get them all on a hard drive. So because vinyl can warp and, you know, depending.
Well, every time you play a record, you degrade it.
Yep.
A physical record, every time you play it. So if you play it once and make a 100% copy, you know, not MP3, you want to do WAV or some lossless compression format. Lossless non-compression format.
Just AIF. Hard drives are cheap.
AIF is fine.
Yeah.
you end up with an astonishingly large file.
Yeah.
But it's 100% fidelity. You get all the highs and lows. You get all the everything.
10 megs a minute. Your 700 megabyte CD would store 70 minutes of audio.
Yep. Yep.
So when MP3 got it down to 1 meg a minute, that's what made portable audio players feasible.
Mm-hmm. Because you lost all the highs and the lows. You lost a lot of the subsonic stuff. Harmonics. You lost a lot of the harmonics and other things. And they did an interesting survey a number of years ago among teenagers.
Yep.
Teenagers preferred MP3s to live concerts.
On crappy little headphones.
On crappy little headphones, because they weren't used to all of the highs and lows and harmonics and all of the sounds of a real concert.
There's too many notes.
Too many notes. So they were more used to the MP3. So a show like ours, mm-hmm. which is all talking, can be recorded at 64 kilobits per second, which is ludicrously low, mm-hmm. makes for a very small file size, but who cares? It's just voices. It doesn't matter. We're not losing a bunch of highs and lows and harmonics because it's just people talking. But when you go to music, you want something better than an MP3 because you want those highs and lows and harmonics.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that one of the ironies is that most of the audio programs stopped using MP3 years ago, partly because of the copyright and licensing restrictions from the original MP3 creator, and because Dolby Labs came out with a better format, mm-hmm. AAC, the Advanced Audio Codec,
right,
which is better, a better fidelity at the same compression of MP3.
Right. Now, I still use MP3s, for example, when I do my computer minute.
Because that's a more common format.
Well, not only is it a more common format, but it's also voice again.
Yeah.
Who cares?
It doesn't have to be high quality.
Particularly my voice, particularly at this point of the year with the
sinuses.
Pollen and the sinuses. So, but AAC is a now common and much higher format. Mac one, AFF, AA, what is it?
AIFF.
AIFF.
The Advanced Audio File Format?
What's the I stand for? Doesn't matter. The point is, that's also a very good one.
Interchange. Audio Interchange File Format.
There you go.
Which is lossless.
Right.
There is a compression built into it. You get a 50% compression. MP3 gives you a 95% compression by throwing away data.
Right.
So that's why a lot of people like AIF, because it's lossless and only 5 megs a minute.
Right. It's a bigger file, but again, as you said, hard drives are cheap these days, so it doesn't matter. I've got about a billion old-time radio shows. And they're all in MP3s because most of them are just people talking.
Was it Og? Og was another one for a while. Og Vorbis.
Og Vorbis is still used. A lot of Linux people use it. Again, great compression, but much better fidelity. I use that a lot. But again, I use that internally for my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use it to send to somebody because other people are going to go, what now?
Yeah.
I still use MP3 for that when I'm doing voice because it's so common. Everybody does MP3.
Yep.
And you're right. AIFF would be better. AAC would be better. Og would be better. I don't need them to be better because it's all voice.
It's good enough.
It's good enough. Exactly right. Exactly right. So, but there are multiple compression formats, and you should pick the one that works best for whatever you're doing. So if you're ripping music, you want to use something that's more lossless, but you get bigger files. And if you're just doing voice, MP3 is fine. An MP3 at 64K is fine. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go too far. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that with your support, we stay member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you in a few.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. It's a lovely day in my neighborhood. And I think it's going to rain later, though. All right. The UK's Competition and Market Authority, or CMA, the regulator that forced Chrome into its web-shattering reversal on tracking cookies, has fired its latest shots. Competition concerns remain under Google's revised approach. It is said to Google's latest thinking. The CMA wants to ensure that these changes are made in a way that supports continued competition in digital advertising. In short, you will still be tracked. And there's this goes to that. Google wanted to kill all kinds of stuff in Chrome.
To make it safer for users.
And the advertisers went to the European Union and said, but this ruins our business. In short, you will still be tracked, and there's no end in sight. Almost all other browsers have now killed off cookies, so maybe you should use another browser. Chrome is the standout, and we are going round and round in circles. Google spent years trying to find out a way of tracking, a way out of the tracking cookie mess it created, but has outgrown. Alas, to no avail. The issue is that alternatives which watered down or anonymized tracking risk changing the balance in an industry that has been built on user data. There's no easy way out. This privacy sandbox debacle has been going on for many years now, and there's still no logical path through. Everybody needs to earn. The industry and Google depend on it. Unlike other browsers that don't dominate the web, Chrome cannot just switch off tracking. And so a 2024 lens is being applied to years-old technologies to try to balance interests. Google's latest iteration of cookie alternative centers on consent. Instead of deprecating third-party cookies, Google will introduce a new experience in Chrome that lets users make an informed choice that applies across their web browsing. This seems to mean choosing between tracking cookies, arguably better for the industry, and something akin to Google's Topics API, which seeks to curtail digital fingerprinting or external cross-site tracking by grouping users together. The CMA says it will publicly consult before taking any decision on whether to accept changes to the commitments and is aiming to do this in Q4 2024. The CMA also plans to provide an update at that time on its views relating to the privacy sandbox tools and its assessment of testing and trialing results. It's hard not to see this situation is now markedly worse. Before, it seemed that options were narrowing down with a shock cookie reversal combined with a seeming CMA rejection of the consent model, which the ad industry worried would repeat Apple's tracking transparency shutdown, looks like a huge setback. In response to the latest update published by the CMA, Google said they are engaging with the CMA on privacy sandbox following the updated approach they've proposed, which lets people make informed choice that applies across their web browsing. But this latest bad news for Google is much worse news for users as a new nightmare of endless tracking starts to come true. Worried about tracking? Give us a call and give us a fake name. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. There's a certain amount of irony here in that nobody cares what Apple does because they don't have enough of the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares what Vivaldi does or Brave does or DuckDuckGo does or Firefox does because they don't have enough of the marketplace. Google owns it all. Google's trying to make it better, and they're being told they are not allowed to.
They get flamed.
Yep.
It's a real problem.
And it's funny that, well, they're starting with Google, and then your early news story that they're going to Firefox. So, you know, who's next? Is it going to be Brave or Vivaldi or maybe the Chromium project itself, maybe?
Right. They're working their way down the list. What Google wants to do is leave it up to the user.
Yeah.
Do you want to be tracked or not?
So Apple did that on an iOS update a few years ago.
Right.
So that when you open an app for the first time that has advertising, which is all of them, there's an option to ask app not to track. Most of the apps, when you launch them the first time, say, there's going to be a message coming up. Please allow us to track you. We don't do it nefariously.
Right.
But so in surveys, you know, like 90% of people said ask app not to track.
Of course they did.
Yeah, most people don't want to be tracked. But so you say, would you like to get personalized ads to your preferences? Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, right. We're going to track you to do that. No, don't do that.
Right. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is
Jeremy from Virginia. I couldn't get the...
Oh, Jeremy from Virginia. Okay, this says Jerome.
That's what came up on the phone. I could not hear him that well.
Oh.
Go ahead, sir.
It's okay. I apologize. I'm on the road, and I'm breaking cardinal rule number one, and that is using a speakerphone. Have you guys considered, in the spirit of talking about music compression technologies, taking your program and running it through a voice-to-text program? You have a high information content, and that would make it a lot more easy to search.
We already do. YouTube does that for us automatically.
What is it running it through?
Voice to text.
Oh, yeah.
So it's automatic captions. And so on, it doesn't do it on the, well, it actually does it twice. It's weird. We looked into YouTube for this. On the live YouTube stream, it will do live captioning. But then after the stream finishes, it goes back through, does offline captioning to make things better. And that transcript is available as a button in YouTube, which is then indexed by Google.
So in order to find your transcript, I have to search it through YouTube?
If you want to see it directly, yes. But just Googling things, since our transcript is part of Google's indexing on YouTube, you'll be able to find. So if you know, say sound bites talked about something, it will find it.
Oh, cool. All righty. Thank you very much, guys.
All right, thanks. Yeah, if you wanted to... And I believe the transcript includes
timestamp
signals. So
yeah.
you can if you go to the timestamp, you can just hit it and go right to that spot. If you wanted to do that with the so that works only with the video on YouTube. If you were to download the audio only, you could then download the thing and do the same and say, you know, at 11:42 we did into the program we did this.
I've been putting chapter markers in the YouTube feed of the callers and the news, and I've thought about doing that in the podcast feed, but then I couldn't use MP3. I'd have to use AAC.
Right,
because
right.
That's a feature MP3 doesn't have.
Right. And again, as we talked about, MP3 is more universal, and there are still devices and programs that don't do AAC and that only do MP3s. So we're stuck with the universal format. The choice is the universal format, which hits more people and doesn't have a feature, or a less usable, a less known program. It doesn't hit as many people, but has a feature.
You're not going to please all the people all the time.
That's exactly right, and it's a
and that just
dichotomy
goes,
that we've been dealing with a long time.
And it still goes to my thing that I play every so often: car cell phones on speakers do not make
I know. I could not hear him.
And the name.
But he was following the law and using a hands-free cell phone.
That's it. That's right.
Yep. But that's the way his phone, the name came up on his phone.
Okay.
Because the ID. And I think, that's. But anyways.
But that's all right.
I got to play that a little more often, I guess.
I guess so. But he knew he was breaking the rule, and so I suppose that gives him a certain number of points.
Hold on.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And
that's what I try to tell everybody. And do me one other favor. Speak up, folks!
Yeah, right.
I've got hearing aids in both ears.
Yep.
And the folks, they start talking. Like I've said before, a lot lower. And I've got you two guys sitting there competing, going into the microphones, and right. I'm trying to listen.
The reason that Dave is quiet is because he doesn't want to be heard over the air. You, on the other hand, should speak up. But yeah. I understand people respond in the same way that they're talked to.
Yeah, because if you folks ever come for a pledge drive, we do have an open house during the pledge drive, which, by coincidence, will be coming up very soon, just as an FYI. You can see here in the studio where we do it. And where the board is and where these two gentlemen sit is no more than 4 foot away. And I have to lean over to the phone closer to them, because that's where the phone is, to take the phone call and try to bury my head down low enough so I could hear you guys calling. So, yeah, just as a word of appreciation.
Right.
Please speak up. I will not yell at you for doing it.
Right. And as you can see, if you come for one of our open houses, and there is one coming up, as Dave said, you will see just how small this studio actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get three people and all the computer equipment and all the cameras that Steve brings and all of that, there's not a lot of excess room in here. And we only have three mics.
Yeah. And they can see it, for those of folks that stream it and can see us live, look around. Those camera angles aren't lying. It's very short distance.
Right, right.
I can sit there, answer the phones, and literally hand Nick
right.
The caller's name on a piece of paper.
Back when we were on a different channel,
yep.
The board op at the time, I know he preferred to be called a producer, but we always thought of him as that raw kid on the board,
yep.
Was in a different room. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact.
Yep.
An entirely other room.
Yeah.
We only have the one room.
Yeah, and he had a modern system, too, where it would
much
come
more
up
modern system.
With the names and all that on the phone system and all that. But.
Right, and that was a station that was designed for call-in shows.
Yeah, this is it.
And this station is designed for polka.
And this is one thing that, we say countless times, folks. You've heard us say it, so it's nothing new, that Rob took a hell of a big challenge and risk, I should say, in putting us on there and making sure that everybody in his audience that was listening before didn't totally abandon him, that we actually brought more folks and listeners to this channel to discover other music. And, it's been a win-win both ways.
And as you can see on our website, yes, we've been on the air for 34 years, hurtling headlong into our 35th year on the air. But we've been here at Jazz 90.1 for over 15 years. It doesn't seem like it.
No.
And it's you people who've kept us on the air. It's you people who've kept us alive. It's you people who've kept this station alive through your generous donations, and we couldn't possibly be more appreciative.
Yeah.
We know that we would be sitting around on our thumbs at home if it weren't for you. Instead, we sit around here on our thumbs, so it's a very big difference. We thank each and every one of you.
Yeah, because it's been through their loyal support that you know has kept us on the air, and we've been able to have fun. I know you folks maybe can't relate to that because you're not geeks like us, but we have fun doing this. That's why we come every Saturday and do this, because we enjoy kidding around. Like I've said this a number of times. This show has lasted longer than my first marriage. The three of us together, we might have our disagreements once in a blue moon, but you could count on one hand and still have a lot of fingers left.
You count on one finger at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it is you folks who have kept us on the air, and Dave is right. This is fun. We think of this as a challenge and as a lot of fun to get these questions and figure out the answers. I've said many, 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 many times, if it ain't fun, I'm not doing it. And so, particularly now that I'm retired, I don't have to do it if it isn't fun. So you people make it fun, and we appreciate that. We'll go back to the phones and have a little more fun with Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Well, a couple of things. Just comment on what a great job you guys are doing with the limited resources and the extra challenges of space.
Thank you. And the limited resources of our brains.
Sound bites, please hold.
And the extra challenge of that. Yes, thank you.
I can tell by that video that you have the three cameras going usually, and I was trying to figure out which way things are connected, and all of a sudden I'd see Dave's hand come into the view of the other camera, and I'm going, wait a minute.
Nope.
Yeah, he's that close.
Yeah, exactly. So just great job.
Thank you.
The gentleman that brought up the with his car speakerphone, even though he broke the rules, it did bring up a really good question, and I'm glad that he did, and you guys gave a good answer, because there are times when I'm looking for stuff and I didn't know I could do that.
Yeah,
I have Linux on a couple machines, and I'm using LibreOffice. And I also put LibreOffice, just so things are the same, I put LibreOffice on my machine at work, which is a Windows machine. And it came up that there was a LibreOffice update. Do you want to install it? And I did, and it was all fine and good. And I'm looking on the Linux device, and I don't see, anything telling me that there's a LibreOffice update. But when I Googled it, it goes from the one I have is 24.5, and it's now 24.8. And it says to open Libre and go to Tools and go to Option, or go to Options, and I don't see a place that says click Update. So would that be in the software updater?
It should be. It should be part of the update process that you normally go through. I did have on my Linux machines. I did have a LibreOffice update just a few days ago.
Yeah. It's 27th. I think it was.
Yeah. I was going to say, is it possible that OS didn't need the update?
Well, I was. Yeah. I'm using Xubuntu.
Okay.
XFCE version of Ubuntu, and it did have the update. It is possible, as Steve said, that it doesn't require the update on your version. There were a couple of updates for LibreOffice that specifically addressed Windows issues.
Okay. That would explain the difference. But in the my Google search, it said that if I go to Open LibreOffice, go to Tools, go to Options, there's supposed to be a place to check for updates, but I don't see. I have a Windows Options screen that comes up that says User Data, General View, and it goes down a list, but there's nothing that says anything about updates.
Yeah, I'm looking through there right now, and I don't...
Isn't it usually in the help menu?
Yeah, I'm surprised that it says it's in tools, but...
Okay, I'll go to help menu, and get help online, start in safe mode, get involved, donate license information and about Libra, but I don't see anything that says check for updates. You know, most apps,
yeah,
you know, like the Money Dance, I can click on check for updates. I don't know.
So this one says go to LibreOffice preferences, LibreOffice online update, and check for update.
Preferences. My preferences. So I've got the LibreOffice main window open.
And there's preferences isn't usually in the edit menu.
I don't see a preferences.
Okay.
Now I open that LibreOffice main window has. Where I can go to Writer, Calc, Impress, Draw, Math, and all those options.
Okay, I see. Well, no. It says choose the Help menu, check for updates to check manually. You can disable automatic checking by going into Preferences.
Okay. So, go to Help menu, go where?
Check for updates in the Help menu.
I don't see that.
Yeah, I'm on the Libre.
I've got 1, 2, 3, 6, 9... 10 different.
This is the LibreOffice 24.8 help.
Yeah, it's like a 24.
Yeah, mine says go to the internet proxy, and it should be there, and I don't see it here either.
Hmm. Well, I'm not sure.
Maybe they took out the buttons because they're doing automatic updates. They may not have rolled it out yet to everyone if it was a recent update.
Yeah. Like I said, the other one that did update was on a Windows machine, so that kind of explains that.
Yeah.
But on the Linux machine, it's got a button at the bottom left that shows all the apps, and one of the apps is a software updater. And I'm wondering if that will give me all the updates of all the software that is installed.
Yeah, in Linux itself, yes, it should, yes.
Okay. Yeah, this is Linux Ubuntu 2404, which is the Noble Nimbat.
Oh, you know what? I bet you're looking at LibreOffice as a user, not as the admin.
Oh. Okay.
So if you look at, and you won't get an update choice as a user.
That would make sense, because only the admin is allowed to update.
Right. I don't, other than the command line, I don't know any place that I would make any choice between a user and an admin.
Right. Generally, you should be able to, again, depends on your version, but you should be able to right-click and say run as admin, but you may not have that option in your version. I don't run that version, so I don't know quite how that one works. But again, yes, you might have to do it from the command line.
Run as administrator?
Right. So you go in and you say sudo LibreOffice, sudo LibreOffice.
Okay.
Right. Instead of
LibreOffice.
Or if you're using a GUI, right-click and run as administrator, maybe?
Well, that's what I said. Yeah. He may not have that option. So now... Yeah, you may get
I'm installing a new version on my computer right now. We'll see if it's there.
Right. All right, we got to go.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks. All right, that's it. We're done for... Oh, I didn't even start my timer because I was playing with Open Office. So I don't know how much time we got, but I'll just say 30 seconds. In that case, I'll say thanks to Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks to each and every one of you. It was a great show. Thanks to everybody who called in. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, would you, for Pete's sake?